evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 1st, 2020. Sudanese living in South Sudan react to the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement to end conflict in Sudan.
We have been longing for peace. We need the peace that will allow me to move freely from Khartoum.
And a man is arrested for trying to sell his children at Konyokonyo Market in Juba.
There was somebody from Denkabur. He came with two children into the house of Ismail. He was asking for the marketing to sell out his children.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some Sudanese nationals living in Juba have welcomed the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement between the Sudanese Transitional Government and a coalition of rebel groups on Monday. Some of the Sudanese who spoke to this program said they hope the peace agreement will bring changes in Sudan. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Salah Mohammed, a graduate from Omdurman Islamic University who sells watermelon and other fruit in Juba, says he fled southern Kordofan when fighting was rampant between rebels and government forces under ousted longtime President Omar al-Bashir. Mohammed says now that government leaders and rebel groups have signed a peace deal, he hopes to return home and take part in rebuilding the southern Kordofan area.
We have been longing for peace. We need the peace that will allow me to move freely from Khartoum, going to Niala, El Fasir, El Ginena, like my home, go to Kordofan, go to Kaduguli, go to Delni, go to Kauda, all is my home. I can also get out from there and go to Damazin.
Mohammed says in order for Sudan to realize sustainable peace and development, people must let go of their years of bitterness and hatred toward the other side.
People must forget the past and open a new page that will unite the people of Sudan, both in the urban and rural areas, because Sudan is big and it can accommodate all of us.
Besides laying their guns, Sudanese Ahmed Kamal says the parties must work to improve the living conditions of ordinary citizens.
As Sudanese living in South Sudan, we are very happy with what has happened and we hope it is implemented as the parties have decided to move from using guns to political engagement for the interests of the citizens and to improve their livelihood, and we hope to rebuild our country, all of us, either in Sudan or outside Sudan.
Dr. Hussein Eldin Osman, a Sudanese from the Blue Nile region, calls yesterday's signing a good first step that will put Sudan on the road to sustainable peace, but he also called on all-out rebel groups to join the effort.
We expect great things and that Sudan will be on a good path for development, stability and economic stability. But we also call on Abdulaziz Al-Hilu and Abdulwahed Mohammed Nur to join this peace process because this is a historic opportunity in the history of Sudan after the revolution which happened in December.
A coalition of armed groups called the Sudan Revolutionary Council and the Sudanese Sovereign Council agreed to a number of protocols on security arrangements, power sharing, wealth sharing, and local autonomy for southern Kordofan and the Blue Nile regions. They also agreed to the return of refugees and internally displaced persons. The SPLM North faction of Abdulaziz Al-Hilu walked out of the talks in protest, demanding that mediators expel General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, often referred to as Hemeti, from the talks. Hemeti was accused of committing crimes against humanity across Sudan during Bashir's rule. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Sudan's former State Minister for Labour, Stephen Arnold, says Sudan's comprehensive peace agreement lacks grantors. He says leaders from South Sudan and Sudan had their national interests at play during the one-year negotiations of the comprehensive peace agreement. Arno says unless neutral bodies monitor the implementation process of the agreement, it will be difficult to hold spoilers accountable.
You know, we have in the past something emerging as regional security complexes by which, you know, neighboring countries or let's say regions intervening into other issues as a way of preventing, you know, insecurity into their own borders. We have seen it in Somalia, in our region, and we have seen it also with the former regime of Bashir trying to find solutions in Central African Republic and then also in South Sudan. These are somehow good, but again, you know, it raises a number of questions with regards to interests that bypass, you know, the main agenda. You know, the agenda here is peace. It's not foreign policy. So when it is mixed now with foreign policy, it becomes complicated. And then the whole question of peace will be undermined when it comes to bilateral relations between, you know, the two main protagonists, and this will be the two governments. This is one of the dangers facing the current peace in South Sudan, and definitely it will have some effects on what's happening in Sudan.
Let us talk about Sudan and South Sudan. It's an open secret that the two countries have been supporting each other's rebels. Now, with the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, what are some of the complications when you take the relations between the two countries?
You know, these two processes are basically serving, you know, foreign policy for the two countries because they have been accusing each other for some time. And they may be right, they may be wrong on certain issues because, you know, Sudan and South Sudan, you know, they were one entity one time. So, you know, a spillover on one side to the other is possible because of the interplay of issues between the two countries. To get back to your question, the two countries, they have that interest of actually stabilizing the other in a way or another as part of, you know, having gains and also normalizing relation. You know, these two countries, as it has been always said in rhetoric, that, you know, this is one people in two countries. So what is happening in Sudan negatively also affects South Sudan negatively and vice versa. So what I'm saying is that, you know, the peace agenda is somehow influenced very much by these dynamics between the two states. And that's why, you know, there is a big danger that you will find holdout groups like we see in South Sudan with some groups that were not able to agree on a predetermined, you know, course of action in terms of what issues to be discussed and how things should be addressed in the peace agreement. So they were considered holdout. The same scenario now we see it in this peace agreement that, you know, there are some holdout groups that are known. And these holdout groups, you know, they are not just peaceful. They have means of violence.
Given a scenario where holdout groups continue to enjoy support from Sudan and South Sudan, what is the future of the comprehensive peace agreement?
The whole issue of credibility, definitely it depends on how open is the process and how inclusive is the process and how legitimate is the process. So these are the three things that actually determine how peace is sustained and maintained, because the buck, you know, ends with the parties rather than with the mediators. So the mediators are basically to allow, you know, these factors to be felt by the parties. And in my view, so far, there is one party that is not very confident with the process, and that's Abdelwahid Nour in Darfur. The SPLM North and the Hilo, up to last week, they are in the process, but their track has been suspended by the mediator over this agreement on who should be sitting on the other side of the table.
The SPLM North disagreed with the government over the choice of a chief negotiator at the talks. And we are talking here about a man called Himiti, who is the chief negotiator of the Sudan government at the talks in Juba.
If you go back, they signed a political declaration with him. And the issue is not basically about the person, but the issue is about the action of the person, if I understood their protest, especially when it comes.
That's Stephen Arno, Sudan's former state minister for labor. Arno is a PhD student of peace studies and international relations at the United States International University in Africa, based in Nairobi. He spoke to me via messaging app on Sunday from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. In part three of this interview, Arno talks about the ownership of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. The South Sudan National Police has detained a man for allegedly trying to sell two of his children at a market in Juba. The police say the man was arrested after he went to Juba's Konyokonyo market to find a buyer for his children. The man denies the charges and says he was looking for someone to adopt his children because he's unable to feed them. For VOA News, Manyang David Maya reports from Juba.
At a press conference today, Greater Pibor administrative area leaders identified the man as Jackson Makir. They say Makir yesterday walked to Konyokonyo Market, where many members of the Murle community reside, and asked if anyone was willing to buy two boys aged about 4 and 8. Judy Jonglei Boyoris, a lawmaker representing Greater Pibor Administrative Area in the National Assembly, says members of the Murle community immediately called the police to report the incident.
There was somebody from Denkabur. He came with two children into the house of his mayor. He was asking for the marketing to sell out his children. And the people told him to sit down, and they called the national security. He was captured.
Makir denies trying to sell his children, saying he tried to get someone to adopt them because he cannot afford to feed them. He also said he intended to return them to his wife's family.
The reason I took them from home was that I wanted to return them to their maternal uncles. I have been staying with them for 8 years, and it has appeared from my in-laws that I had stolen these children. So I decided to return the children to their uncles. But when I failed to find any one of them here in Juba and there is no money for me to go back to Kapoita, I decided to look for someone who can take them and give me something to survive.
Makir's brother Nialton Nial, who shares his house with Makir in Juba, describes how Makir left the house Sunday morning with his children.
So what happened before 3 days is that he killed himself with alcohol in the early morning. And he started disturbing that I went just to collect these children. These are mine and what to take them back to Kapoita. Because the mother of these children is in Kapoita. So in that morning, he took the children and he told me that he is going to the station of the bus which are going towards the Torit Kapoita Road.
2 days later, Nial says he learned his brother never arrived in Kapoita and instead wound up in a police cell in Juba for allegedly attempting to sell his children. Nial says his brother is mentally ill.
The man has a mental problem and that has been with him for some time. So that's why his family, the part of family has been with me. That is these two children and the rest of the family of the elder wife has been cared for by the younger brother.
Nial says the family had already decided to contact police so Makir would be under their care and not create more problems. Human rights lawyer Biel Boutros Biel condemned the alleged attempt to sell children. He says allegations that Makir is mentally ill should be thoroughly investigated.
Selling a human being is something unacceptable. It's not acceptable at all. It's wrong. It is against the human dignity. It's against the right to life and right to dignity. I think while we condemn the act, we need to go deeper to look into analysis why a parent has reached that far to sell the children. This is something that can give us thinking in the country, what is going on in the country.
National Police spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin says the police will care for the children while investigating the incident.
These children will now be with us. Concerning these children, we have a special protection unit which will take care of these children, and when there is a need for counseling, we have social workers from the Ministry of Gender and Social Welfare to take care of them in areas of trauma and counseling.
In the past, the Murule and Dinkabur communities have accused each other of abducting and selling each other's children. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how are traditional healers handling COVID-19 in Africa? Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could relive an age, what age would you like to be?
I would like to go back to my secondary school days because there are other things that I see that I did not do well. I was very childish.
I would say that the age between 20 and 22nd. By that time, I think I was very more handsome than today, and I was energetic than today.
That's 18, because it's the time I enjoyed most. I got to know more about life, what the world is all about.
I would like to be at the age of 17, because at that time, we go out. We go out for hunting, playing football, or a lot of entertaining activities.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America, and in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at traditional healers in Africa and COVID-19. Cameroon commemorated African Traditional Medicine Day on Monday, questioning its population against quacks trying to make money, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. Authorities in Cameroon say while some traditional medicine have proven medical use, many fake healers are looking to scam those who cannot afford modern medicine. For VOA News, Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
A so-called African traditional healer uses a loudspeaker to entice passers-by. He says people who have not found solutions to their health problems in hospitals should come to him. Cameroon authorities say there are more than 800 traditional healers in the capital, Yaoundé. The Cameroon Association of French-Speaking Healers says nationwide there are at least 19,000. Healer Nadej Avulu accepts chickens as consultation fees from patients who do not have money. Avulu, who has received 15 chickens in the last day, says she specializes in spiritual healing. She says early signs of spiritual attacks include severe pain on the forehead, nose bleeds, vomiting and fever. Avulu says she helps patients by giving them medicine she prepares from mango, tree roots and animal skin. 50-year-old farmer Marie Esimbi took her sick son to Avulu. She says her 32-year-old son regained his health and started working on his own after he went through some form of spiritual cleansing. Esimbi says the healer boiled some leaves and grains for her son to drink and wash his face with 3 times a day. Cameroon authorities say about 70% of its 25 million people depend primarily on African traditional medicine, as many in remote areas cannot access hospitals or afford them. But while some herbal medicines have been shown to have health benefits, many other alleged traditional medicines only help the so-called healers. Divine Teller leads a group of 5 such healers who claim to have successfully treated patients with COVID-19.
Nous avons des statistiques bien documentées, suivies dans le milieu clinique.
She says she can confirm that 1,000 people who tested COVID-19 positive recovered their health after they were treated with African traditional medicine. Chala says some of those who recovered from COVID-19 were more than 60 years old. Cameroon authorities stress there is no cure for COVID-19 or effective treatment by African traditional medicine. Cameroon Health Minister Manauda Malachi on African Traditional Medicine Day Monday warned against quack healers and their claims.
Comme tout Africain, nous connaissons très bien quel est l'apport.
Malachi says, like many Africans, he can't undermine the importance of African traditional medicine in saving lives and ensuring general well-being. But he warns it is imperative for successful African traditional healers to organize themselves and help the government to kick out from their midst those charlatans who are damaging the lives of innocent people. In that regard, Malachi says he has ordered a census of prominent and acclaimed African traditional medical practitioners in Cameroon. Malachi said their aim is to root out quacks and stop the illegal business from putting Cameroonian lives at risk. The World Health Organization marks African Traditional Medicine Day to involve verified traditional healers in healthcare services. Shortly after the pandemic reached Cameroon in March, the government began urging those with COVID-19 symptoms to go to hospitals, not to so-called healers. The WHO says Cameroon has over 19,000 confirmed cases of the virus and more than 400 deaths. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Still on health matters, officials in the Jonglei State capital Bor say people displaced from their homes by recent floods could contract COVID-19. A senior health officer in the state says 69 cases of COVID-19 has been recorded in Bor and 7 people died from the disease in the past 4 weeks. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Dr. Samuel Majur, Director General in Jonglei State Health Ministry, says they have recorded 69 COVID-19 cases, including 7 deaths, in Bor since the government installed a coronavirus testing machine in the area 4 weeks ago. He says the condition under which displaced people are living exposes them to a greater risk of contracting the pandemic than other people.
Challenges are huge. First, we have a lot of internal displaced people everywhere in churches and school. This is very high risk because people are just sitting in one place and they don't even remember if there is a COVID-19.
On top of the overcrowding, Dr. Majur says the situation is particularly worrisome in Bor because most residents do not want to comply with the preventive measures like wearing face masks.
Yes, we have given out the face masks, but what we can say, people are not wearing them. I don't know why they don't wear them, but we have distributed. So this is one of the challenges that we are facing. The second one is we have the center, but sometimes if we want to admit a patient, they refuse.
The rate at which the virus spreads multiples when someone who tests positive refuses to be admitted or self-isolate, according to Dr. Majur. As a result, he says vulnerable groups with weak immune systems, especially kids and the elderly, become victims. Some COVID-19 patients who declined to be recorded say they chose self-isolation to avoid being stigmatized. A 26-year-old Bo resident, Cornelio Nyong Makwei, says although he fears becoming infected, he does not wear face mask.
When you put on the mask, others will even come and intimidate you, right, saying, are you the only person who need to escape the death of coronavirus? Why is everyone staying like this? So it's even more problem when you put on it and everyone sees you having the mask and no one has it else. We are not observing the instructions being given by the Ministry of Health. Like, we are greeting, we are staying in crowded places. So that is another problem, but having a mask on is a protective measure, of course.
Bo State Hospital Medical Director Dr. Boli Chow says many residents don't follow the recommended guidelines, even though they know people in their community have died from COVID-19. He says pregnant women, people over 60, and people suffering from diabetes, tuberculosis, or high blood pressure have low immunity and could die if they contract the coronavirus.
I don't know, our people are so reluctant to accept the fact. Some people still live on as a myth. In others, the belief is just a myth that coronavirus does not exist. Others even believe that it was even washed away by the flood. So they have just to continue about their normal daily life. They just have to greet themselves in overcrowded places. But the disease is real.
If people who test positive ignore the disease, Dr. Chow says it greatly increases the risk of dying and spreading the virus to others. South Sudan has recorded more than 2,500 cases of coronavirus, including 47 deaths. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Dawla Jadid by Silver X.
Selector number one, Kiss Record.
The Azan Bidaya, the Dawla Jadid. The sound of Sudan. The Azan Bidaya, the Dawla Jadid. The sound of Sudan. The Nina Kedisawa, Makeba Wakiko. The Dawla Jadid. The Nina Kedisawa, Makeba Wakiko. The Dawla Jadid. The Azan Bidaya, the Dawla Jadid. The sound of Sudan.
That's can be Golo, South Sudanese. For better than it, we don't have a row. The king has a bigger money in the ring. The world really alarm, but no le alarm. Publicly, officially, historically, calling money in a colors. We don't have Jedi. Well, they do Jedi. We saw not Jedi. But like a Jedi, we'll be holiday. Yeah, yeah, yeah. South Sudan, they be got out of Jedi.
We've been listening to Silver X with the song Dawla Jadid. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to listen to this program. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kanita Ahmad, Weleta Aswin, Kanita Abdar, Weleta Yellow, Yakwana Junubin.